What I always thought, like, everybody thinks at the enterprise level that they have like this monolithic CRM with their whole list, right? And that's shared among like all the branches and offices. That's not the case in most cases. Like, a lot of enterprises are broken up departments of maybe like anywhere from 5 to like 12 people. And they'll have their own platforms and their own suites and whatever they like to work with within that department, completely separate from another department. And so at that scale, the enterprise companies are totally fine with their own marketing site and whatever, it's on WordPress, and so they're good.
Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat. You do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! Today's show is brought to you by OmniSend, the solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops or your own website, and AirWallex. Boost your own international sales and save on costly foreign exchange fees by accepting over 60 local payment methods, including Apple Pay and Google Pay. I'll tell you more about our sponsors later in the show, but today we have Adam, who is flying solo as he chats with Adrian Toby, the CEO and founder of Groundhog. Adrian dives into the importance of CRM, and the two of them take a fork in the road, literally, and talk about the potential future of WordPress and the internet. Lots of great tips and insights coming your way, so let's tune in.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Woo Biz Chat. My name is Adam Weeks, and today I am very happy to share with you that my guest for this episode of Woo Biz Chat is Adrian Toby from Groundhog. Hey, Adrian, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I am the CEO and founder of Groundhog. We make a CRM and marketing automation plugin for WordPress. That's our breadwinner. And we also got some other stuff going on in like pop-ups and email delivery, but mostly CRM and marketing automation.
Very, very cool. We will definitely get to that. We're going to uncover some interesting things. And during this episode, I hope our guests, along with me, we can learn something about why do you need a CRM? And yeah, let's just start with that question. Who needs a CRM, Adrian? Like, what is this for? And tell me, what does a CRM even stand for?
I was at, CRM stands for Customer Relation Management Platform. And I was at my local Chamber of Commerce meeting yesterday, and someone asked me, it's like, I don't have a CRM. Like, why do I need one? And my answer last night was at a certain point in your business, it stops being about sales tactics and your own personality and stuff. And eventually business just becomes about data. And being able to leverage data in a way to make informed business decisions as well as informed marketing decisions. And you need typically somewhere to put that data. And CRM seems to be sort of the go-to answer for that. All your contact information, emails, activity and reports. And basically, the CRM becomes the dashboard of your business. And without one, it becomes increasingly difficult to make informed decisions, as well to truly understand how your business actually works. Like, do you know where your customers are coming from? Do you know what their customer journey looks like? You know, once you get out of like the dozens of sales into the hundreds, if not the thousands of sales, it truly becomes essential to be able to sort of group that data and be able to understand what it means so you can invest accordingly.
Nice. That's perfect. That's a great intro into just kind of this us figuring out audience together what a CRM is, how we're going to use it. So let me come to this next question. When do you know that you need a CRM? And I'm going to follow that question up with, and typically, and let's just go, you know, WooCommerce, WordPress. These are the people in our audience. So someone who is in WordPress, who's, you know, maybe has an agency, different reasons why people are in WordPress, product companies, hosting companies, of course. When do you know that you need a CRM? And what's going to be kind of the first way that someone will successfully use one? Is it just sales or, yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
So I would recommend that if you're in e-commerce, if you're in WooCommerce, you start out with one like immediately, just from the get-go. If only as a place to actually just like be able to contact and keep in touch with your customers and just have somewhere to put them. And then later on in your business, you'll be able to leverage more of what CRM actually has to offer in terms of like customer reports and automation stuff. Like a lot of that might not be useful from the get-go, but if you start collecting data early, it's going to make it easier to leverage it down the road. So if you're just doing e-commerce, I just recommend from the get-go. One of the first ways that I see e-commerce people specifically leverage it is in understanding where their customers are coming from exactly. And specifically, like, we have analytics, right? We have analytics tools like Google Analytics, which you can connect to like Monster Insights, and that'll give you like a customer journey from where they came from to like a specific order, right? And you can go into each individual order and you can see that customer journey, but there's not really a clear way in either the Monster Insights dashboard or the Google Analytics dashboard to identify that with a specific individual over time, right? And that's what the CRM does. It's like, okay, this specific individual, they have a name and an email address, and you can go to this report and you can look at them, and then you can market to that person individually, right? Which is not possible otherwise. Like, you can't go into WooCommerce and then select a list based on their customer journey and then market to those people or export them or do whatever you want.
Okay.
Right? So that's really the value, is like, where I want to understand where these people are coming from, how they got there, and then I want to segment my list based on that information to either send new marketing or to upload them as a custom list to Facebook remarketing or something, right? That's the immediate value. And then there's also like some automation value in terms of like setting up like cart abandonment, or again, just being able to market to them. Like, I want to select the list of people who abandoned their cart.
Okay.
And then I want to send those people an email and want to send them what was in their cart. And there's lots of tools that do this that are outside of CRM, but they're like more like one-off and they're a lot less feature rich in terms of being able to then correlate that back to their entire customer journey as well. So it just, a CRM just sort of ties all that information into one place and makes it super accessible.
Got it. So I love the idea, you know, you've got this wealth of knowledge. You're in the trenches, you're right there with the people who are using this day to day. I'd love to hear about maybe some examples, or an example of someone that wasn't using a CRM, came on with Groundhog, and wow, they got it. They're figuring out their business is growing. Do you have any examples like that you could share?
I'm not going to share specific business names, but I can share examples. Is that okay?
Yeah, example. Yeah, exactly. Anything you're comfortable with.
All right. Well, not WooCommerce specifically, but Give WP, a lot of the nonprofits that Give is working with. I've been speaking with the co-founders of Give, and they think that there's a lot of synergy between Groundhog and Give WP, and we have a great integration with Give WP. And so their customer, Give WP's customers, they're looking for a donor management system, which is basically just CRM, but instead of customer, it's donor. And so they've been sending them to us, and we've been working with a few of the nonprofits that they've sent to us. And at least for the nonprofit sector, like what we have going on is much better than what they're used to in terms of donor relation management. They can segment their list via people who've donated to specific campaigns that they run through GiveWP, and then send them emails to like donate to other campaigns that they have going on. They have donor abandonment. So if like someone hasn't made a donation in 6 months, they could be like, who hasn't made a donation in 6 months? And then segment that list of people and then send those people an email or call them or export them or upload them to the Facebook remarketing list, right? So a lot of the nonprofits that we've been working with are discovering, you know, that they're businesses, right? They have an obligation to go and reach out and market to their list of donors in order to continue bringing in money, because without money, like, nonprofits die and businesses die. So it's like, you know, the old school way of collecting donations is still good, but there's just so many more tools available now that they're learning that they can leverage to extract more value from their donors.
Nice. Yeah, I think that obviously, like, when you do business online, when your word, the business that you have, your WordPress website is really the home for your business, having that interaction with your customers and how you manage your relationship with them, you know, beyond, I would imagine if you have more than 10 customers, you're going to start needing to keep track of what's actually happening.
In one case, one of these nonprofits out of Texas, mm-hmm. They had a person on staff whose sole responsibility was to peruse through a CSV list that they'd export from GiveWP and look at the dates of their last donations and then send them an email through their inbox manually, being like, hey, you haven't donated. And then they'd have to do that and record their interactions in like a Google spreadsheet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's, in this day and age, that's insane. That is Sisyphus pushing a boulder up a hill, like insane. So now that's completely automated. If someone hasn't donated in 6 months, they just run that report in Groundhog. They shoot them a broadcast. They add them to a funnel, and then it's a recurring thing. And then it tracks the conversion rate of those people to if they donated or not. So that's all now been completely automated. And that person is now freed up to do actual, like, meaningful work, like pounding the phones or knocking on doors or, you know, some of that groundwork that still works. Right. But now they're freed up to do that because the what can be automated has been.
Got it. I bet you've seen some rather large spreadsheets get uploaded to Groundhog. Is that what they're oftentimes coming from? Is just like an Excel or Google Sheet and then coming to you to Groundhog?
The nonprofits, yeah, they're typically coming with a spreadsheet. They're just, I mean, nonprofits are poor.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Right? That's just, I mean, some of them aren't, but many of them are. Probably like 99% of nonprofits are poor. And that's not, you know, a dig against nonprofits. It's just like they have different, you know, expectations and they have tighter budgets and a lot of people are volunteering. And that's just the name of the game sometimes, right? And so for a nonprofit, it can be a large expense to invest in some of the specific DRMs that are out there, like Nation Builder. Those can get quite pricey quite quickly. Like they're all contact list based pricing, so usage pricing. So the more contacts you have, the more expensive it is. The more users you have, the more expensive it is. And as your nonprofit, you know, you get lists. You know, if you're collecting like $5 per donor, like that's not enough to cover the expense of having a list of like 60,000 people. It's just not. And right, so a lot of them are just coming with spreadsheets because they can't afford it, and then they're like, oh my god, this is great, you know, we have all this, you know, this feature rich data set now to actually like go through the list that we have and actually make informed marketing and business decisions based on the data that we can see from our dashboard, from the customer journey that we can see. Like if we can go into the list and we can see that more people are coming from this referral partner or this other nonprofit, we might want to invest further in that relationship, right? So,
right. What do you see as the biggest barrier for a company, a nonprofit, or someone using Groundhog? Maybe they're still new to it. They're figuring this all out. Maybe they haven't done much of this in the past. What is the biggest barrier for them to getting the most out of a CRM like Groundhog?
Traffic, probably.
Okay.
So CRM is a solution to being overwhelmed by traffic, right? But if you have no traffic, then there's no data. Right? Like you gotta have something to put in order to get something out. So a lot of people sometimes put the cart before the horse, and they invest in CRM and they get all their automation set up, and but they don't have any traffic, and then, you know, a bunch of traffic shows up and then nothing that they set up actually works, because like, if you, I don't know if you're like a Basecamp guy or you look at any of like their stuff or their literature, but they always make decisions when pain shows up, and like, CRM is a solution to pain. So if you're not experiencing pain, then maybe you're not ready. Yeah, so what happens sometimes is people will invest in like a bunch of automation, but they don't actually know their customer that well. Like, I see this with startups too, right? They haven't identified product market fit, or they haven't identified their pricing correctly, and they set up a bunch of stuff and a bunch of literature and write a bunch of emails and all this automation that they configure. And then they end up in like a month completely changing, and then they have to do it all over again, or they have to change it. They have to do a bunch of copywriting, right? It's like, I always like to do things that don't scale first. Like, I'll start out doing something manually, and then once sort of like the kinks are worked out from that, then you can design a process around that and automate it. So that's my preferred way to do it.
So you would recommend someone that's just kind of getting started, and that they maybe not worry about the CRM to begin with, maybe do it manually. And once that becomes painful,
at least the automation stuff, like you need, like, I would recommend that everybody start building their list immediately. And a CRM is a great place to have a list, right? So at least do that, right? And then you can start collecting data, and you can identify which data is actually important to collect. And you can start building your list and, you know, send a broadcast every once in a while. And then as you experience pain in relation to, you're getting a bunch of traffic and you don't know where it's coming from, or you don't know what to do with it, or you don't know, or maybe you're doing stuff manually that's taking too much time, or you have a staff member that's wasting time doing menial labor, like that's when you identify, okay, we can solve that and that and that, go look at the data, implement a solution, implement some automation, problem solved.
Got it. All right, so we've talked a little bit about the person just getting started. Maybe they haven't had a CRM before. And really, the indicator seems to be, if you're having a pain point, you've done stuff manually, like, that's when we're going to really start leaning into automation and a CRM, and you need that traffic. Let's kind of switch to the other end of the spectrum. And a company, is there at some point, you know, there's a lot of different CRM solutions. Is there ever a point with which a company would outgrow Groundhog? Like, what does it look like on the enterprise level for a CRM like Groundhog?
Well, we are used. So something interesting about the enterprise market that I'm familiar with is we work through a number of enterprise companies through agency, like our agency partners that we have. So I'm aware of a number of agents of enterprise companies using Groundhog. But what I always thought, like, everybody thinks enterprise at the enterprise level, excuse me, that they have like this monolithic CRM with their whole list, right? And that's shared among like all the branches and offices. That's not the case in most cases. A lot of times, each department, like a lot of enterprises are broken up into departments of maybe like anywhere from 5 to like a dozen people. And they'll have their whole, all their own stuff. They'll have their own platforms and their own suites and whatever they like to work with within that department, completely separate from another department. Right? Okay. So like sales. Like I'm in Ontario, Canada. Ontario, Canada sales will have their own CRM, and Vancouver will have another one, right? And those are completely separate. And so at that scale, like the enterprise companies are totally fine with, they have like their own marketing site and whatever, it's on WordPress, and so they're good, right? And then, so that's sort of like where we operate within the enterprise area.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense. These companies get so big that it doesn't, I mean, it matters what one part is doing and it matters what others one is doing, but in many ways, you'll have an entire department kind of operate as their own company, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's all very regional as well. Like, regional operations will have their own regional stuff with their own regional marketing activities, and They'll spin up projects for just like specific campaigns. Like, they'll go and acquire a bunch of software just for a 6-month campaign, and then run that campaign and then close it all down.
Got it.
At that scale, Like, it's all good. Like, it's like when nobody's uploading like 10 million contacts to like a WordPress website. But a million and under is, we've seen it all. I mean, we've even seen like 2 to 3 million people get some like really optimized stuff for WordPress going. And so we've seen that, like, it's possible. But anything a million under is like totally like bare bones. Go for it, whatever.
So we got to make sure the algorithms are listening to our podcast. AI. How has AI, maybe has it changed how you're thinking about CRMs? You know, it seems to be changing so many aspects of business. What do you see as far as the CRM landscape and how that relates to the changes in AI?
So there's sort of two ways. I mean, we don't do anything with AI yet at the moment. It is on my radar. I mean, we are a WordPress plugin at the end of the day. Right, it's like we're not running like machine learning on a WordPress website. That's just not going to happen. So there's a couple ways that I see it impacting the landscape. I mean, number one is just in content, right? Subject lines, email content. Just like, I want to write an email about this product, and then it just generates a bunch of stuff. Like, but that's not interesting anymore. That was cool 6 months ago. It's no longer cool. It's like, okay, true. So what?
Neat,
right? What I think, and I learned this at, shout out to Cabo Press, Chris Lemma. I went to Cabo Press last year, and there was, and I don't remember his name, but the talk was quite interesting. Actually, I do remember his name. No, I don't. I'm sorry. I think I remember who gave the presentation, but I don't want to miscredit. So I'm just going to say there was a presentation at Cabo Press, and it was cool. And he was talking about deep forest machine learning. So typically, so we have this tool, it's called lead scoring. Lots of CRMs offer this tool. And what most CRMs offer is a rules-based lead scoring algorithm, where you as the business operator would decide or tell the rules what stuff makes a lead worth more or worth less. So one rule could be like they've opened 5 or 6 emails in like the last 30 days, and that makes them, you know, add 100 points to that, a certain threshold, they'll become a hot lead, so that your salespeople knows that this person's highly active, they're looking at the stuff, they're hotter than maybe someone who hasn't opened any emails in the last 6 months, or if they visited like 3 pages or whatever. And you can divide all these different rules to create a score. There's different thresholds for those scores to say hot, warm, you know, neutral, cold, freezing, whatever. That's rules-based lead scoring. Deep forest machine learning lead scoring is basically like you give the AI just like a dumpster of all your data, and then you tell it which customers are worth more based on their value, meaning that the value of their total orders or whatever. And then it will, given the data, identify what the key performance indicators are that actually contributed to that person being worth more. And then from that, it will basically generate that rule set automatically so you don't have to, and then identify other people on your list who are hot or cold based on the KPIs that it identified from the actual customers.
Got it. So you could essentially be better at segmenting your list. Is that kind of...
Yeah. And the AI basically says, these are the people that you should be spending your time on and not these people. And that's kind of what it does. That is useful.
Right.
More or becomes more useful based on the more data that you have, right? I'd probably wager like 10K and under is just not enough to extract a meaningful amount of value. You're just going to get a ton of false positives. I think you need more and more. Like enterprise are definitely going to like benefit from something like that, but I think most of us in the small business market won't.
Yeah. What do you see the interface looking like between Groundhog and that type of AI use? Is that something that you go over to, you know, OpenAI and run and dump that data there, or Bard, or...
I've got no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
That's going to be the interesting one, is how do you then leverage the CRM with that information that you have?
Yeah, it would have to be like, I mean, you have to run it as like a service, and then so there'd have to be some sort of, I mean, on a technical level, there'd have to be some sort of like API connection that like reads all the data that's available, and then dumps that into the AI, and then it spits back a score. So it works in three. So there's a three-step process. You give it the data, and then it identifies the KPI, and then you'd send an individual contact to that, and then with all their data, and then it'd be like, okay, here are the things that make this person valuable or non-valuable, and then it'd spit back a number.
Got it.
And like that's how it would work.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on, because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results, all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org. Whether it's for yourself or your clients, we all know that foreign exchange fees can be costly to the bottom line. And that is why Airwallex is the complete multi-currency WooCommerce checkout for you or your clients. By supporting popular payment methods from global cards to over 60 local options, you'll get rid of those costly FX fees across more than 10 different currencies. With the power to improve conversion by localizing your checkout, it brings you a solution that is secure, simple, and powerful. Plus, it works seamlessly with WooCommerce subscriptions. So head over to airwallex.com/integrations/WooCommerce. That is AIRWALLEX.com.
One of the things that seems to me with AI is sort of the promise, and it's essentially what you've been saying, but we learn about our customer more, like we get to know them better. And instead of just A-B testing your A, B, C, D, E, F, G element, you know, all the, you know, almost each person could essentially get their own customized email that is going to be more specific to them because of what we know about them. Are you seeing anybody, you know, getting really granular on the type of outreach that is being done to them, like, you know, email?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And again, that's something that's actively possible without AI, but it's again, rules based, right? So it would depend on you, creating however many templates or conditions or, you know, dynamic content, to create the different tonalities or whatever, in order to do that. And then again, it also relies on how much data you have access to about that person to make those decisions. Now, again, where AI could eventually come in, and so there's some creepy stuff that marketers do. All right, so I'm going to take a little bit of tangent. There's some creepy stuff that marketers do. Like one, I'm not sure how familiar you are with this, but there are just huge databases. My email address, my credit score, my address, my information is all in those databases. They're out there. Yours is too. Everybody who's listening to this podcast, their information that they didn't even know people had is in a database somewhere. And it's identified by your IP address and your operating system and your Mac address and just a whole bunch of indicators that identify you with that row in a MySQL database somewhere. It exists. It's very creepy. There's probably 3, 4, 5, 6 of them out there. I know there's a guy that I know. He's got a startup going, and his whole business is that if someone visits your website based on your IP address, the device that you're using, they can actually go to those databases and identify you and then give back to the person paying for that service your email address, your name, your location, and everything without you ever having to actually divulge or sign up on a form on that website.
Your favorite color, your dog's first name.
So there's some creepy stuff out there. Favorite color, everything. And also, like you were saying, like their interests, their personality types, and so, like, for example, let's say you're looking for a car loan, right? If you could just automatically have someone access to someone's credit score, that completely changes how you would then cold call that person back, right? And that saves you like a lot of time, and ends up giving you a completely different conversation, right? And so, eventually, we're going to get to a point where this information is just fed into an AI, and you could just pass someone's information, and then it's just going to content spin. The email that you send or the automated phone call AI that you send now through like Twilio does AI calling and stuff. We're headed down a dark path because marketers are the worst. I know I am one, and we ruin everything.
Are people, I mean, I don't know if you have obviously information about this, but are people bringing those kind of creepy lists into Groundhog to be used in marketing? Is that what they're doing with the lists?
I don't know. Again, I mean, so Groundhog is entirely self-hosted.
Yep.
People host it on their WordPress website. What they do is their business, not mine.
Which I you know, when we talk about why Groundhog over HubSpot or Salesforce, these different, you know, behemoths, do you think that's probably one of your biggest like differentiators? Like you get like is yours.
100%. I always Facebook and Instagram and whatever was down yesterday. If that's your main content channel, it might not come back one day. That's unlikely, but you have no control over it. And email is still the only it's still the only mostly decentralized method of communication. Everything else, you gotta pay somebody, or you gotta acquiesce to somebody, or there's rules or limitations or restrictions. Like email is still mostly 100% decentralized. Like, I mean, the main inboxes, like Gmail's market share, right, is a problem, because if Gmail doesn't want people to see your emails, then they won't. But if they don't use Gmail and they use something else, then they can, right? There's another thing. Like, if you don't know, Gmail reads your emails.
It's terrifying.
All of them. It knows what emails you respond to. It knows what emails you like to read. It knows how much time you spend reading those emails. And then what it actually does with that information is that it penalizes the marketers sending those emails. So if your email has like a bad retention rate after open, it's just going to stop delivering it to people. So there's an incentive to send good email. And then somehow spam still gets through.
I woke up this morning to a notification from Elon Musk that if you're reading this, it's because we're back up. I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, when you don't have control, when you're on someone else's platform, I think it's a big reason why WordPress and WooCommerce, you know, is so important, is that you own your stuff and you're not putting your business in the hands of someone else as much as possible. I mean, we have to.
You still have to pay for hosting. Yeah. I mean, but you don't have to, because you could always buy a tower.
You could buy a tower.
Get an IP address. Like, it's doable. I mean, it's a hassle and a headache. But if you truly wanted to, you could go 100% self-hosted. But like, I see, not daily, but maybe like once or twice a week, I'll see an SOS from someone who got kicked off of HubSpot or Kajabi or ActiveCampaign or Keep for God knows what reason. You know, it's like, you know, we're getting content restriction policies are getting kind of out of hand, in my personal opinion. And they're being sort of applied arbitrarily to legitimate businesses that maybe said more than they usually would have. And self-hosting prevents you from being put in that situation.
Got it. Content creation, when it comes to writing that perfect email, when it comes to that email that is going to resonate with your audience, are people building those primarily in Groundhog and sending them out that way? Or are they maybe creating something, maybe using Canva, that is, you know, a beautiful looking email, and then bringing that in? What do you see people's kind of like typical workflows as far as creating good email campaigns?
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Number one, Canva doesn't have an export as HTML option. You can create an email in Canva, but you can't actually send it. It's just an image. I mean, you could send just an image if you want. It's not accessible in any way. Usually what happens is you create an email in Canva and then you export that and you ship it to the developer team, and then they code the email from the design that you created. Is typically like that workflow at the enterprise level. At our level, like our email editor, it's drag and drop, colors, backgrounds, borders, text, fonts, you know, it's the whole thing. It's like Elementor dumbed down to email, because I always get an email. It's like, can I design an email in Elementor? No, you can't. Because email HTML sucks. It's just bad. Outlook, which is still a significant percentage of the inbox market share, desktop Outlook still uses to process HTML the 2013 word processor.
Really?
It's terrible. It's awful. And so there's no JavaScript. Like, see, it's like still CSS 3 and HTML. It's not HTML5. It's like, it's no SVG support. Like, it's terrible. It's terrible. And people don't know that, and I have to explain it to them. And it's like, just use our editor and you can get really close to what you're looking for.
So be careful getting fancy, because if they're opening it with Outlook, they may not actually see your email correctly.
Yeah, don't like our editor is broad but restricted enough that if you color within the lines, it'll look good everywhere. Like, you can add custom HTML and custom CSS, and that might jank things up a bit, but if you're coloring within the lines, it'll look good in every inbox.
Got it. You've got some other projects that you've been working on. So Groundhog is kind of the bread and butter. Anything else exciting that you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, we bought Hollerbox from Scott Bollinger last, nice. I don't know, a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah.
I don't even remember when we bought it, but we bought it and we gave it a huge facelift. And it's just a really straightforward pop-up plugin, that the emphasis on Hollerbox was just speed and just getting stuff out the door. Like, I was tired of designing pop-ups in like Elementor or like Optin Monster, and it's like there's templates and stuff, right? But then you got to change all the colors of the images, and I was just tired. Like, I'm working with an agency right now redeveloping our website in Gutenberg with like block templates and block theme, like the whole thing, just because I'm tired of like tweaking in Elementor. I'm just tired. Like, I'm busy. I just want it to be done. And so that was sort of like the direction that we went with Hollerbox. It's like just a bunch of predefined templates in different layouts, and that's the layout. You can't change the layout. What you can change is the color, the color and the image. Right? Yeah. And the content. Like, that's what you can change. And there's a custom CSS section if you wanna play with that. Whatever, but so like, you know, first name, email, phone number, or like yes, no buttons, or like there's a cool survey one that we added where you can do like survey questions like A, B, or C, and then it takes you through, and that's pretty cool. But it's like, those are the templates, and you can have a pop-up on a page in like 25 seconds. And like, that was the idea. If you have to design everything and you're like super, Hollerbox is probably not for you. But if you're absolutely frustrated with designing pop-ups in like the drag and drop and whatever, and you're just looking for something, I want to ship, I want it to look good, I want it to work, right? And I want reports associated with it, like conversion rates and which pages people convert from. And you want some analytics associated with that, and you want it to connect with Groundhog, use Hollerbox, because it's just I use it for all of our pop-ups. I think it looks pretty good. It gets the job done, and it's really, really, really fast.
Nice. Wow. That's cool. So you've got Hollerbox. I know there's some other kind of products and things that you're doing. You've been in the industry long enough that you've gotten to the place where you're growing, you're purchasing other products to run for your own business. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been in WordPress?
I've been in WordPress since 2015.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So going on 9 years.
9 years.
Yeah. I've been in WordPress, and then I've been doing this since 2018.
Okay. Now you started out in WordPress and doing ground pretty young. I would imagine that you were kind of one of the younger founders, starting companies up in WordPress. How has that experience been that you're no longer like the new kid on the block? You've been here for a while. How is that?
I went to WordCamp Europe last year, and for the first time, I met someone doing a WordPress product that was a year younger than me, and that was a weird experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. I bet that's gratifying, because when you're like the young kid, there's probably this element of you got to prove yourself, and now you're kind of past that. You don't have to prove yourself to anybody. You're here.
Yeah, I mean, it's been around for a while. It's always funny. I still get like pre-sales questions. It's like, I'm concerned about the longevity of the product. Like, obviously it's like new because you're like a young guy or whatever. I'm like, we've been around since 2018. And they're like, oh, well, okay then. And I'm like, we're here for a long time, not a good time.
So, is WordPress, you know, is this your lifelong passion? Do you think, do you see anything else on the horizon for you?
Well, I mean, now we're getting a little bit philosophical about WordPress and stuff, which I'm totally down for, because I have opinions. They may not be right, but I have them. And I believe in the WordPress promise and the objective and the value proposition and self-hosting. I truly do. And I'm not convinced that the state of information and data sharing that we have at the moment in terms of what we currently call the internet is going to be around for ever. I just don't know that. And so I'm hesitant to put all my eggs in the WordPress basket for that reason. I think what we look at as a website in 30 years is going to be a lot different than what we think of as a website now. I mean, 30 years ago, websites barely existed. did they exist at all 30 years ago? Like, yeah. Right, what is that? Yeah, they did, right? Like, we had Netscape. They weren't great, but we had Netscape.
Yeah.
But like what we think of a website now is just totally different. I think 30 years are going to go by and we're going to be like, what was WordPress again? Like, I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm open to being wrong. I mean, that'd be good for business. But you know, what we're all doing is providing solutions to the problems of today. And I'm totally fine with that. And I'll ride that wave for as long as that wave is around.
There you go.
Yeah. What I want to eventually end up doing is, I live in wine country, and I want a bottle of wine with my name on it. that's where we're going. That's where we're heading.
All right, we'll be sponsored by Groundhog or just Adrian's red wine, white wine.
My wife actually runs a media company down here called Tipsy Theory, and she reviews like a lot of the wineries and provides winery experiences. So probably that is what's going to eventually evolve into the winery. And then I'm going to exit at some point and then help her sort of build that dream. From a philosophical level, I'm not sure if WordPress is going to be around in the next 30 years.
I think the problem that WordPress solves, I don't see that intrinsically. Will the market support WordPress? Who knows? But the idea of wanting to have control, having it yourself, like the open source, we'll see if ideally WordPress is able to continue to be that thing for people where it's their digital home.
One of my predictions is for the market is, as we have this wonderful service, which I pay $11.99 a month for, called Spotify. It's great. It gives me access to all the music I could possibly hope for. We also have this other service called Audible, which you could get credits for. It gives you access to pretty much every book on planet Earth. And those are silos of a format. And there's not really a silo format yet that's been adopted at large by the market for the written word. For like digital published content, news, articles, opinion pieces. I guess the closest we could get was maybe like be like Medium, but that has a low level of adoption compared to the amount of content that's out there. Now, my prediction is we are going to get a silo where the New York Times, all the major newspapers, all the independent publishers, they're going to basically, rather than being podcasts, right? Think of the Spotify podcast network. It's just going to be the written word or the digital content publishing network silo. Like, that's just, it's going to be Spotify for blog posts. And I think that's where we're going to be. People are going to be able to monetize through that. People are going to be able to what? But again, that sort of depends on again, how much people still consume through that. Like, I think consumption of like blogging has dropped a lot with podcasts and just the absolute immense amount of information that's available. But I think it'll happen eventually. I think we're just, that silo is going to eat at some of the market share, and
that'll be interesting to see how that comes about. I mean, you have, yeah, we definitely consume in different ways. Like, that's obviously changing. Obviously, you know, the success of YouTube is that, yep, people want to watch videos. The success of these different platforms, podcasting, people want to listen to different things, but people still want to read. And that's the thing that in the conversation with even about AI is that, yes, AI will change a lot of things, but there will still be things that we hold as true. And reading isn't going away. It's definitely here to stay. But I like that idea of, yeah, I'd be curious to see how, if as the algorithm gets to know me and it brings those articles to me, the things that I, those blog posts that I am interested in, because that's what is good about Spotify, is that it, like, you know, like all the music's out there, but if it doesn't suggest things to you, it's not as helpful.
It's hard to discover, right? And I think the person or the organization that sort of cracks the discovery algorithm for blog posts is going to win at the content silo. And we'll see what kind of impact that has. I don't know yet.
Well, I mean, how many amazing blog posts are out there that I have never read that would be perfect for me, but I just don't know that they exist?
Yeah, just like our RSS feed aggregators are just not enough anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
There's too much content, and there's so much content. And if you want access to good content, right? It requires publishers being on board as well. But you know, I'm looking at all the newspapers, and they're all struggling. And I think they'd probably jump at the bit, especially if there's compensation.
Right. Yeah. You've got to absolutely. Well, Adrian, we're kind of wrapping up towards the end. I've got a couple last questions. This has been really, really interesting. I do have to ask, Groundhog, 2 G's. What was the origin story of Groundhog, the name? And I've just been curious.
My favorite movie is Groundhog Day.
I do Bill love Murray. That movie. Oh, such a good movie.
I think it has a great message. It's both funny and philosophical. And sort of the inspiration was that people with problems that are causing pain in their business, once they make a change, right, problems start to go away, and Groundhog's the change.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That was a perfect way to end this episode. Before we go, AJ, do you mind if people want to learn more about what you do and where you're at, where do you hang out online?
Yeah, find me on Twitter at Adrian Toby, T-O-B-E-Y. You can also just go to the website, groundhog2gs.io, adriantoby.com, or you can just Google us and you'll find us. And I'm a pretty available guy. I don't hide behind a large tower. I don't hide in a tall tower. Like I keep my ear pretty close to the ground. So if anybody wants to chat, reach out and we'll talk.
Adrian, thank you so much for informing us, and I love that our conversation kind of went to some really interesting places. That is what I think this is all about. So as we wrap up, my name is Adam Weeks, Cirrus Influence here helping out with Do the Woo Biz Chat. Next week, when we come back, Emma Young, I hope will be here. I hope that I held down the fort without her, but everything is always better with Emma. But thank you all. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and we'll hear from you soon. All right, take care. Bye.
Hey, I'd like to thank Adrian for taking the time to join us and share his thoughts not only on the world of CRM, but also getting a bit philosophical about WordPress. And do make sure and check out our sponsors, Omnisend.com and AirWallex.com, as there would be no Do the Woo if not for their support. So until the next time,